Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good Saturday morning to you. Oh, my goodness. I'm sitting here, and I'm looking outside of my window, and it's an absolutely beautiful, sunny Saturday, and it's just fabulous. Welcome to Hand and Footprints, What is Your Legacy? I am your host, Ms. Ricky R. Jones. You could have been anywhere today for the next hour, but you chose to be here with me, and I truly, truly appreciate it. Really glad that you're here. Welcome to all of you who are listening. Our phone number to call in is 347-826-9723. You can press the number 1. You can also listen in online at blogtalkradio.com/Ricky Jones. You can also go to my Facebook page, which is The Hand and Footprint, What is Your Legacy? And you can send me an instant message that way. If you are friends with me on Facebook, I'm under Ricky Jones. You can also instant message me there. And as always, listen, you know how we, those of you who are used to being on the air with me, you know how we're going to do. We're going to bring on a fabulous guest, and really remarkable how this woman has really come from out of nowhere, and to do her thing in a society, and it's great. I love having guests to come on. I absolutely love doing this show and sharing the stories, because everyone has a story. Everyone has a purpose and a mission, and to be able to share that, because a lot of times people think, oh, you have to be this celebrity. And guess what? All of us are infamous in our own right. But a lot of people think that you have to be this extra special person on TV, on this, on that, have gugobs of money. No, sometimes what you do starts in home, starts in the neighborhood, starts at the job, even starts with you starting your own organization or your own company. Whatever the case may be, you definitely are the catalyst for change, and you have a story to tell. And whether it's your story that you're telling or someone else's that you're telling on their behalf, by all means, you can definitely, definitely tell your story. Today, we have a wonderful guest on. And she's going to, like I said, she's going to be telling us about her story. For those of you who are new to Hand and Footprints, thank you so much. I had to kind of give you guys a background about what Hand and Footprints is about. For those of you who are always on with us, you know, I thank you so much. Hey, Facebook, I see you guys already. I see you in, and you are biting at the bit and can't wait. And I'm glad that you're here. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram. I always have to run through it because I'm going to say this again, but I always have to run through it in my head. Twitter, Instagram, Google Plus, and Facebook, all under Ricky Jones, R-R-I-K-K-I Jones, okay? So anyway, the whole purpose of today's show, the story that I'm going to bring you, the guest that I'm going to bring you, she is an activist, she's a mother, she's an entrepreneur, and she's an author. She has this fantastic book, and I'm not going to tell you the book just yet because I want her to get in and kind of talk to it, you know, speak on it herself. And it really is the whole purpose of why we live. You can survive anything. I mean, you can come from anywhere to get to your next level, and it really is on you to decide whether or not your struggle, your tribulations are going to be your catalyst or going to be your defeat. And this guest today is just really, really, what can I say? But I'm going to go ahead and read her bio, and I'm going to let you know. Andrea Walker, she's a mother, entrepreneur, HIV, AIDS activist, philanthropist, and author who crawled out of the depths of abyss to being one of Philadelphia's reigning women of entrepreneurship. Walker is the founder and chief executive officer of IROC, which stands for Intelligently Redefining Our Culture. IROC is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide children and families within the community a vast amount of resources to nurture, mold, and develop a superior view and understanding of importance of intelligent Some of their services include mentorship programs, HIV and AIDS outreach and testing, and community engagement initiatives. She has more information and you can find out. I'm going to read the spot right now, but she's going to bring that on again as she talks about it. It's www.i-roc.org. Okay? Don't worry about it. By the end of the show, it will be on the Hand and Footprints page. She'll tell you how you can follow the organization, everything, so it'll work with us. Walker grew up in an atmosphere expressing the harsh reality of abandonment as a result of her mother's drug addiction and chaotic lifestyle. One of the pivotal moments in her life was when she was 10 years old and she learned that her mother contracted HIV. Walker was devastated and baffled from the horrible news and began to harbor resentment and hatred. Writing became a sense of comfort and solace in her life. Eventually, she used her writing and powerful story to create her first published book, A Beautiful Struggle. Wait till you all get a chance to read it. A tragedy, a triumph story loosely based on her life. The debut of this novel has taken place this past August. As a matter of fact, it was absolutely fabulous, August 18th of this year, right here in the city of Philadelphia. Being an activist of HIV and AIDS, Ms. Walker raises awareness by educating the youth about HIV facts and prevention and ultimately reversing the negative stigma surrounding HIV and AIDS and people that have contracted the disease. Through IROC, she provides counseling, educational resources, on-site testing, and the host of hosting impactful community engagement events and campaigns. One of IROC's most infamous campaigns, which made a big impact on the community, was the Know Your Status campaign right here in Philadelphia, which provided free HIV testing and resulted in over 100 people attending and receiving testing in 2014. In June of 2015, for National HIV Testing Day, the event grew to a full weekend event involving over a dozen sponsors. This campaign then directed towards the Red Tie Affair, a networking event for millennials and entrepreneurs as such to come together, create change within the community while raising awareness of HIV. In addition, she is the creator of Lessons from My Former Self, the podcast, which is a discussion about her darkest moments that prepared her for her destiny and catapulted her into her purpose. She's won numerous awards, such as the Executive Director's Award from Influence Action and Billis Unsung Hero Award. Ms. Walker continues to amaze us with her leadership, courage, remarkable aptitude for activism, and social change. Now, she doesn't put this in here, but all of this, and that she is also sweet and humble and very, very down to earth. So I just wanted to, you know, because a lot of times we get hung up on, we tell people our bio and people have, they may have some type of perception about us, but definitely when you talk to her, it is like talking to one of your girlfriends and you just feel so comfortable around her. She's touched the nation with her story and her life lessons. She plans to go even further within her career, changing the world by intelligently redefining our culture. Her voice and strength is phenomenal, a true testament of victory and greatness, knowing that life's lessons build strength and life is truly a beautiful struggle. I say all that to say, good morning, Andrea. How are you? Welcome.
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for agreeing. Thank you so very much. I truly appreciate it. And it's absolutely beautiful here in the city. I don't know where you guys are, but we're in the city of Philadelphia, and I'm telling you, it is wonderful to be able to see beautiful days like this.
Yes.
Rainy days, but something like I'm sitting here and I'm looking out the window, and I want to be on my deck so bad, sipping my tea. But it's just absolutely gorgeous out there. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. I can't complain at all. How about yourself?
I can't complain. I can't complain at all. All right, so I've read this fabulous bio, and I was telling folks how wonderful you are. But what they really want to know is, well, who is this Andrea Walker, and what is she all about? How did she get to this? What's she talking about, this beautiful struggle? What? So who is she? How did she get here?
You know, I'm just from Philly. I was born and raised here in Philadelphia. I grew up in the Germantown and in East Oak Lane section of Philadelphia, and I was raised by my family members. You know, that's like one of the hardest questions when people ask me this, no matter how many times people ask me and I try to explain, I try to, like, find the best words in the least amount of time to describe myself. But I really believe that the title of my book, A Beautiful Struggle, really describes who I am and everything that I've been through that has made me who I am today. I'm a mother. I'm an author. I'm a philanthropist. I run a nonprofit organization here in Philadelphia. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm just like everybody else. And, you know, my story, it's kind of unique, but not so much. I'm sure there's other people out there that can relate what I've been through and what I go through on a daily basis that make me who I am.
Yeah, you say that, but but it really is amazing. And that's why when I was, and it's funny, when I'm looking for guests, I always call it trolling, because that's how I feel like I'm just trolling and seeing what's out there. But I get a chance to come across stories that, you know, really just like, wow, like, okay. And when I came across your page, and I said, well, wow, that is definitely, because you're right, you know, all of us have our struggles, and you're pretty mm-hmm. sure somebody has gone through something similar to you, but you had a chance, you've had a chance to get out there and say and talk about your story, because clearly it can't be easy for those of you. Make sure that you, first of all, know your status. Always know your status. Young, old, doesn't matter. Just know your status. And
right.
We have definitely come a long way from HIV and AIDS when it first, you know, became something that people knew about. And it's still a disease. It's not a one-person disease. It's not a particular group of people. It is still a disease, period, that needs support. It needs awareness and everything else. So if you don't mind, Andrea, just, you know, kind of, because we don't want to tell too much of what you put into the book, but kind of give us the background to, you know, living your life and getting to this point.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, too, and then making that decision to not, because like I said earlier, people, we all have stories and we all can either make the decision to either cave under our tribulations or we can share them. And there's somebody out there I know that has a story, and they may need that encouragement to share that story. So just kind of let us know, how did you get to this point where, you know, going through what you went through to be able to get here?
Well, you know, for me, when I learned that my mother was HIV positive, I was really young. I was 10, and at that time, HIV and AIDS wasn't something that you saw PSAs or any type of promotion on TVs of, this is what HIV is, or this is what AIDS is, or get tested or know your status. I think that they were still running the after-school specials of just say no to drugs, because that's
right.
All I remember at that time. So when I learned that my mom was HIV positive, because I was really young and I didn't really understand what HIV was, and my family didn't take the time to talk to me in depth about what HIV was, because I really believe that they didn't know what HIV was either. I think that they were still trying to understand what it was and how it affected my mother and how it would ultimately, you know, affect her, and not just her, but my family as a whole. So for years, my family didn't talk about HIV or AIDS. It was something that was never brought up or mentioned again. I didn't really learn about HIV and AIDS until I was in high school. I was asked to do a senior project for graduation, and just so happened I got assigned HIV and AIDS. And I started doing my own independent research on what HIV was. And I think that at that point, that's when it really hit me. It really hit me. And I talk about this in my book, how hard it hit me that my mom is going to die, and the realization that this is real, because it didn't seem real for, you know, those 7 years from the age of 10 to 17. It didn't seem like my mom was sick. The word was there. The label was there. But it didn't look real to me. She looked regular to me. She looked anybody else. She acted just like anyone else. She lived this normal life. But, you know, it became real once I started reading, you know, the effects that it would have on her, that it had on other people. And I don't know when, but in addition to my mom being HIV positive, I had a lot of other, you know, issues that I had to deal with growing up, just from, you know, being abandoned as a child and, you know, being misplaced and, you know, not having a steady upbringing or a stable home life. So I had a lot of issues to deal with in addition to the HIV and AIDS, but it didn't take prevalence in my life until, like I said, I became sexually active and I started doing research, and it kind of, not kind of, it really scared me, because it was the fear of the unknown. Who else has HIV? You know, it didn't seem like people really knew definite answers. I got mixed information from different sources. So I became really paranoid. I started thinking that my mom could give me HIV by touching me or hugging me. I went years without hugging her or having any type of physical contact with her, just the fear of thinking that she was going to give me this disease and we were both going to die. And then I got really, really conscious and really started doing research when I was about 19. I think about 1920, at this time I had got engaged and was about to become a mother and things like that. And it started getting real. Like, my mom started physically looking sick. She started going to the hospital and things like that. So that's when it really was like, okay, something is going to happen. Something is really about to happen. I don't know. People always ask me, you know, where did you get the strength from? How did you overcome all of these things? I don't have an answer other than God was giving me. When I look back on things, and even through seeing a therapist over the years and going to counseling and things like that, you know, they all say the same thing all the time. Like, you know, we don't understand how you made it through this. We don't understand how you come out, you know, with the strength that you have. And a lot of times I just look back and I have to just say, like, it wasn't me. It must have been God, because the effects that people think that it had on me, it didn't. It did have a lot of effects on me, negatively and positively. But from it all, I think that the most valuable thing I gained from going through everything is the strength. And for a long time, I hid that my mom was HIV positive. So writing A Beautiful Struggle was my way of releasing everything that I had bottled up in me. I started writing my book when I was about 14 years old, and I was done by the time I was 17, but over the last year and a half that I've had to go through the editing process, it's been really emotional and really draining, just having to relive a lot and really come into grips with this is my life and this is who I am. Because a lot of times things happen to us, and I know for me, I didn't want to accept that this was my life. I didn't want to accept that my mom was HIV positive. I didn't want to accept all of these things. I hid from it by blacking it out. I hid from it by not saying, if I pretend like it never happened, then it'll just go away. But it didn't go away. And the more I tried to suppress it, I felt like the angrier I became, the more, you know, depressed I became, the more questions I had. But once I started really talking about it and embracing it, I started to realize this is my story and this is who I am. And the only way that I'm going to be able to deal with this is to embrace it, love it, accept it. I have to accept that this is my destiny. And through that, I found my calling to speak to others and be able to have the strength to talk about it. And I actually, you know, one of the things that I talk to some of my mentees about is, you know, embracing your struggle, because then it empowers you. When you reject it, it suppresses you. But when you embrace it, it empowers you to move forward, to grow, to be stronger.
And that's a statement within itself. I mean, And you have definitely said a whole mouthful there, because even when you're saying, like, you didn't want to accept where you were, because a lot of us, we go through what we go through, and we didn't want to accept where we are, and you're right. We do take that notion of, if I don't say it, I know it happened, but if I don't say it, if I don't mention it, people won't talk about it. I won't have to talk about it. Because sometimes you don't want to tell the story over and over again because you're like, oh, God, I sound like a broken record.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you have to feel like, no, I have to say this story over and over again because somebody needs to hear it. And you going through the process and writing a book at 14 and finishing it at 17, you could have left it and said, well, forget it. You know, it's just a book. It's what I wrote, and I'm not going to do anything else with it. How did you finally really decide to, you know, how was that whole process of deciding to take what you wrote and actually put it out there and share it?
That process was really hard for me. I never set out to write a book. That was never my intention. Becoming an author, everything that I am today was not in my own plan. So when I wrote the book, it started out as journals. My book started out as journals, and by the time I was 17, I had about 15 black and white journals. And the process of putting it together didn't actually start until I was about 22. I wanted to put it out, but I was scared. I was really scared because, you know, I felt like people would judge me. I felt like people would read my book and think they knew me and think that they had the right to cast judgment on me. And I was scared of the backlash and the negative stigma that's associated with people who have HIV and AIDS. I was scared of people casting that on me and my mom and my family. So it took me a long time, you know, to finally say, like, I'm going to do this no matter what. I always, you know, had it in my mind that I was going to do it, but I didn't know on what level I wanted to do it on. And over the past 2 years, you know, it just came to me. And like I said, with me accepting my situation, accepting my past, and that's when I was like, you know, I'm going to put this book out here no matter what. So I put the book out, and it's loosely based on my life growing up with a mother that's HIV positive. But I also, like I said, I went through other things growing up as well that I, you know, I added in there. And then I have friends and family members who went through things that, you know, I felt like affected me, whether directly or indirectly. And I wanted to make sure that those stories were told as well. And, you know, it just grew, and it took on, like a mind of its own. And the characters took on, you know, their own people. And there it is, you know. But it was a really hard decision. I don't regret it. Sometimes I ask myself, you know, is this ever going to end? Because it seems like it's growing beyond what I ever could have imagined it to be. And sometimes I do get tired of, you know, talking about it, and I feel like a broken record, and I have to keep saying the same things over and over again, and people want to know. But every time I say it, I feel like people reach out to me more and more, and the impression that I have on them and the effects that I have on people, I know that this is bigger than me, and I have to humble myself and just allow God to work through me, because it's not for me. It's not about me. I've already done it. I've been through it. I've experienced it, and I feel like I've gained what I needed to gain from it by going through the experience. Now it's for other people to learn and gain what it is that they need to gain from it.
And that's, like I said, I'm glad. I'm so glad. Now, once you decided to do the book, did you just take it and say that, you know, find yourself a publisher? Did you self-publish? Like, how did that whole process come out? Because I'm pretty sure people probably have those black and white composition books somewhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're probably contemplating, you know, because we had the black and white. Mine is not a black and white. It's one of those. It's just pieces of paper. I don't even want to lie. It's just pieces of paper put together. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It's just put together, and I don't know. So, but how did you get to that process? Did you say, here, publish my book, or forget it, I'm going to publish it myself?
When I was 19, I started researching how to publish a book. At that time, one of the most inspirational books I had ever read at that time was The Coldest Winter Ever. I had a teacher who used to call me Winter every day, and I didn't understand why he kept calling me Winter. And one day he said, I want you to read this book. And I went and I brought the book, and I read the book. And I was offended, actually. and I went back to school, and I said, you know, I'm not Winter. I'm going to win because I'm going to come out on top. You know, I was a problem child in school. I was loud and obnoxious and mean, and I got into fights, and, you know, all the things I was going through at home, I negatively expressed those things when I went to school. But my teacher saw something in me, and, you know, he was like, Andrea, I don't know what it is that you're going through at home, but I know that you're smart. I see your grades, and I see a lot of potential in you, and I need you to get control of your emotions so that you can be a winner and not a winter. And I didn't understand that. And when I read the book, like I said, I was offended, and I went to school, and I said, I'm not Winter. I am a winner. And I told him that I would show him that I'm going to overcome what it is I'm going through. You don't understand, but I'm going to, you know, overcome this. And I started researching how to publish a book. And Terry Woods at the time had just put out her book, and I reached out to her, and I sent her my manuscript or my synopsis, and she was very interested in publishing A Beautiful Struggle at that time. But again, at that time, my life was so crazy and upside down. I found myself raising a 4-year-old child overnight and, you know, going to school full-time and working full-time and providing for me and the child. It never panned out. And then about 2 years later, I started sending out to other larger companies and publishing companies and things like that. And I probably got like 25 rejection letters. Everybody just was like, no, no, no. And I still have them to this day. And I have the one yes from Terry Woods and all the rest of the no's. And then I wanted to reach back out to her again. And I was like, you know what? I want to do this all on my own. I've always been the type of person where I didn't want anyone to do anything for me. I didn't want to ever feel like anyone was giving me any handouts. So I learned about self-publishing, and I just went from there. I started researching on an editor. I reached out to someone in New York who did my editing for me. I created my own graphics. I created my own cover. I did everything for my entire book from start to finish. I had a team of people guiding me on some things and giving me some insight and feedback on different things, but for the most part, I want to say 90% of everything surrounding A Beautiful Struggle I did on my own.
And that's amazing, because again, here we are. You're a mother. At this point in time, you're a mother. You've come through a heck of a situation, you know, and you're researching and finding out, and, you know, you're kind of like the flower that's blossoming at your own point in time, and now you have author, and it's like, wow. Did you have that moment of like, oh my God, like, wow, this is really me.
Yeah.
I'm really doing it.
I had that moment, and sometimes it does not seem real to me. You know, sometimes I always say, and this is one of my greatest quotes, other people's perception of me is not my reality. Because sometimes I have to, like, pinch myself and say, like, this is you. But then there's a small piece of me that's like, no, but I'm just still Drea. That's it. You know, like, no, that's, I don't know what other people are seeing. I'm just still Drea. That's it. And everybody's like, no, you're an author. And all these titles and things like that, I laugh when people come up with new titles to add to me and my titles. And I'm like, oh, okay, great, I guess, you know. So it doesn't seem real to me, you know, all the time. Sometimes I get those overwhelming moments where it's like, wow, this is my life. But a lot of times I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
And it's funny because, and like I, when I was doing the bio and I was doing your introduction, and it's the truth, because a lot of times titles added on to us, and sometimes we become the titles, and we totally, you know, forget how we got the titles in the first place. But one of the things that I truly admire and respect about you is, with all of your titles and all the things that you have done thus far, you're still Drea. And that really is that speaks volume. It really, really, and I appreciate that. That truly, in this day and age, that truly speaks volume. So I thank you for that. So now you're a mama, you're an author, you're a research nut, you know, you got this, all this going on. How did IROC come about? Like, how did
that all... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, IROC is my baby. Like, that is like my, like, one of my children. Let's see, about 3 years ago, someone reached out to me and was like, hey, I want to start a nonprofit. I went to school with this individual, and he was like, you know, I want to start a nonprofit. And at that time, I was doing PR, and I was like, well, and he knew my work ethic because we had went to college together, and he knew that I was, like, really good at doing research, and, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to find the answer. And he was like, you know, I know you don't really know anything about nonprofits or anything like that, but, you know, maybe you could come on and do PR for us and you know, help us in that aspect of things. And I was like, okay, sure. So I went on as I signed on as their PR person, and within about 3 months, I found myself helping him to build his for-profit organization and turn it into a nonprofit organization, filing his paperwork and, you know, creating bylaws. And I had never, ever, ever knew anything about a nonprofit. You know, one of my dreams growing up was to have a recreation center that provided resources to people who have HIV and or AIDS and their family members. But I never deemed it as saying, like, I want a nonprofit. It was like, I just want a recreation center. So as I'm working with him, I helped him, you know, do his thing. And one day I was like, you know, I should be putting this this time and effort into my own. And, you know, we kind of just, like, parted ways. And, like, within, like, 2 weeks, I started thinking of a name. And I said, you know, that recreation center that I want it to be bigger. And I, at that time, I was still going through the publishing phase of my book. And I said, you know, everything that I write about in my book, In a Beautiful Struggle, I want to see it manifest in the real world. So I talk about not having resources growing up as a teenager, not having anyone to talk to about what I was going through, about not knowing what HIV was, about, you know, my teachers not explaining it to me, my family not explaining it to me. So I said, you know, I started looking around, and I came across organizations here in Philadelphia that provided some resources, but not really directly towards the inner city and the urban community. So I said, you know, there's a need, and I wanted to fill that need because I was that child who needed these things growing up. So that's how IROC came, you know, came along. One of the things I also talk about in my book that kind of is the reason for the name, IROC basically stands for Intelligently Redefining Our Culture. So in the book, I talk about how I was really smart in school, but I dumbed down a lot because I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be cool, and, you know, I didn't want my friends to think I was a nerd, and, you know, I really wanted to be accepted. And at that time, being smart was not cool, you know. If you were smart, you were like, oh, they're a geek, they're nerdy, they're corny.
Exactly.
Right. So I wanted to change the mindset, and I said, you know, we have to really change the mindset of our youth. Of the world, but we have to start with the youth because they are our tomorrow, they are our today. So if we change their mindset and redefine the way that they think about, you know, being educated, about understanding the power of knowledge, then we change our tomorrow. We change the outcome of the way the world is going. So that's how IROC became, you know, Intelligently Redefining Our Culture. And culture, that doesn't mean just us as Black people, but our culture, whatever culture it is that you are, whatever culture it is that you take to or you identify with, that's the culture we want to change. We want to change everybody's mindset. So IROC, you know, we basically, we provide the resources to the inner city and the urban community, and we place emphasis on HIV, AIDS awareness, outreach, and on-site testing. And one of our goals is to actually get into the school systems and provide HIV testing for all of our high schools.
And because it's definitely needed, it's definitely, because even in 20, it's amazing, even in 2015, people still have this stereotype and the stigma, and they say, oh, well, that's just a drug addict's disease, or that's a homosexual disease. Hello? They're finding that people who have had blood transfusion, I mean, there's all, of course, it's still a sexually transmitted disease. You still, you know, intravenous sharing. You still have all of that. But still in 2015, it amazes me that we still have a limited view and the fear. You know, 20 years ago, maybe you can understand the fear that once you were diagnosed with either the virus, it's like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. But now with all the technology and all the medications, it amazes me that people are still afraid to get tested. They like sex,
yes. Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to get tested. Really? And now yes. It's like, hey, I don't like needles. I can't stand a needle. I really can't. But I love the fact that I can get my mouth swabbed. I'm thankful for
right.
that. Thank God for technology. So it boggles my mind. It really boggles my mind. Like when we discussed before getting on the show, I told you I'm a very big, there's certain organizations and there's certain causes I'm down for, and I'm definitely HIV and AIDS, even though I have never experienced it anywhere in my lifetime, but it's just something that has always touched me. I just felt like, you know, this is definitely something that I wanted to be involved with. Those of you who are just tuning in, welcome, welcome. You're on Hannah Footprints. I'm on with Miss Andrea Walker. She's an activist. She's a mom. She's an entrepreneur. She's a research guru. She is everything. But the bottom line, she's still just Drea, and it's fantastic that she's on with us. If you have a question for her or a comment, those of you who are online, press the number one. Those of you who are listening online, because we actually have a couple comments, and we're going to pull them up in a couple of minutes. We have some folks from Facebook. You can go to my Facebook page, which is the Hannah Footprints page. You can also, if you're following me just as a regular friend to Ricky Jones, you can send me an instant message that way. So we do have a couple of comments for you. One of our Facebook friends says, thank you so much, Ms. Walker. Thank you so much for telling your story. A lot of times people are afraid, especially with people who are, you know, deal with us. And when they say us, they're one of our friends who has, I'm HIV positive. And when I first found out, I thought my world was going to end. And it's just, it's people like you that really help people like me to make it through. So thank you very much. So that's one of our Facebook friends who is giving you a shout out. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. One of the things that I talk about in my book that this comment just made me think about was growing up feeling alone and not being able to speak out about what it was that my family and my mother was going through. And I meet a lot of people who tell me the same thing, like, you know, thank you for speaking up for us. And I just want to say that people don't understand, and this is our message behind our Know Your Status campaign. They say, the statistics say that one in six people are HIV positive and unaware. However, one in six are HIV positive and unaware, or are infected and unaware. That's what the term is. They're infected and unaware. But I like to say that we all are affected, and I need everybody to understand that. I think that is really important. Listen to what I'm saying. One in six people are infected, but we all are affected. There is a difference between being infected and affected. Please pull out your dictionaries and learn the definitions. You are affected by this, whether it's directly or indirectly, whether you want to admit it or you don't. You know someone who is HIV positive or who has AIDS or who has had it and has passed away, whether it's in your family, whether it's a close friend, whether it's a distant relative or something like that, and it affects us all. And I think that it's really important for us to understand and embrace that and, you know, speak up and speak out against it to bring awareness, because this is not a disease that, you know, we can't stop. It's not a disease that you inherit. Unless you, you know, contract it through your parents and you're born with it, it can be stopped. It's not like diabetes or lupus or anything like that. It's a preventable disease. And unless we're bringing awareness to it and we're speaking up and speaking out against it, it's just going to continue to, you know, take over our communities. And take away our families and our friends and our loved ones. And nobody wants to go through that. So why not try preventing it before it actually happens? But if it does happen, please understand it's not the end of the world. It is not the end of the world. I know over 100 people who are HIV or AIDS positive, and that's just by me coming and speaking up and speaking out against it. You know, so a lot of people are living with the disease, and they're living healthy lives, and they're making good, conscious decisions to protect themselves and to know their status. So that's the most important thing, like really just know your status.
And I say that all the time. Oh, my gosh, know your status. And it's so funny. They tell us, you know, women at the age of 40, you need to go and have your breast smushed. And men at the age of 50, you need to go have your prostate checked and da-da-da-da-da, and you should do this and you should do that and know your family history and blah, 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 blah. But even in mainstream medical society, they're not still telling you as they should, as much as they should, know your status. There are a lot of people out here who are running around don't know their blood type, and that's
right.
Something. I mean, really, something as simple as that. You don't know your blood type. Know your status. If you know that you're, I think people still, young folks and old folks, I think people still are with this conception of, oh, it's not going to happen to me.
Right.
For every person, especially if you're having sex. For every person that you're sleeping with, you're also, you know, like the old saying goes, you're also sleeping with the person they've slept with.
Right.
So wouldn't you want to know?
Yep.
I mean, if you go to the bathroom and something's not feeling right, wouldn't you want to know?
Mm-hmm.
You want to find out then, and you're so right.
I did an article not too long ago for the redpump.org organization, and you know, in the article, I talk about, you know, having the conversation with your partner and getting tested with your partner. And I don't remember exactly word for word what I said, but I basically told them, you know, what it is that I practice. And my practice is that I don't have sexual intercourse with individuals unless you either can go with me to get tested and we can test together, or you can show me your paperwork that you got tested in the last 30 days. And I got a lot of backlash from that. I got emails, I got text messages, and why would you say that, and how could you put that out there like that? And it's like the same way people can have unprotected sex and not know their status, people don't want you to speak up about the truth. They always say be real, be honest, but the truth is not what people really want to hear. And I had a long discussion with my team about my statements that I made on this blog article. And, you know, I try to explain to everyone that at the end of the day, HIV and AIDS is so real. There will be a lot of people who, like I said, who text and email and direct message me about the comments that I made negatively. But for every negative comment or email or text message that I got about that article, I had at least 20 positive responses. Thank you for being honest.
Right.
Thank you for, you know, respecting yourself. Thank you for teaching the person that you're with to respect themselves. A lot of people, if you set a certain standard for yourself, people will fall in line or even fall back. You have to set the standard for yourself. This is what I practice. This is what I do. And, you know, a lot of people found that, like, you know, wow, that's dope. I would have never thought that someone would be so honest and so frank or be so upfront about something like that. Why aren't more people, you know, having this conversation? Why aren't more people following this practice? I don't know. I think that people really need to reevaluate and understand and really appreciate other people who respect themselves.
They do. And like I said, I mean, we all like the whole idea of getting and hooking up with someone and being active with someone. But to have a simple conversation, and it's funny because even folks, you figure you would only get that kind of conversation or that kind of, I guess, backlash for young folks. But you find people who are in their 30s and their 40s who are dating and being active, and they say to another person, well, when was the last time you were tested? And I've heard men and women say this, like, they give me this strange look, like, I can't believe you're even saying that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? Don't I look clean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, really? We're still thinking that? I mean, really?
Yes, we are. They are still having that thought process. And a lot of people are still very ignorant to the reality of how serious this AIDS and HIV is in our communities. And it's hurtful to me, you know, because this subject is so sensitive to me. When people display their ignorance, it's very hurtful. You know, I had a conversation with someone who said, you know, the Straight Outta Compton movie just came out and how they were really upset that, you know, they displayed Eazy-E and his tragedy with HIV and AIDS and contracting the disease. And I said, why? Why are you upset? And they're like, because, you know, there's no way in the world he contracted that disease by having sex with females. He was having sex with pretty females. They weren't dirty girls. And I was like, is this a real conversation? Did you really just say that? And he argued me down, and I was so offended. And I was like, you know, this is your comment is what is wrong with our society today. Please stop looking at people and trying to diagnose them. You cannot look at a person and diagnose them. It doesn't work that way. And I'm going to need you to take off your sunglasses and really look at this situation as a whole, logically, okay? Please educate yourself, please.
And you told him right. Now, one of our other faces, but it's funny and sad at the same time because people,
yes.
And he was being honest and very, you know, that was his process, and that's probably what was told unto him and how he's learned about it. And it's a cycle. It seems like a never-ending cycle, but thankfully we do have you and we do have IROC and we do have the beautiful struggle that gives people information, gives people inspiration to be able to step out of the darkness, so to speak, and come into the light and get some knowledge. One of our Facebook friends says, again, thank you so much for doing what you do. How, they say they work with young folks, you know, in an after-school program, and they're going to be picking it up after the end of the school year starts. So they're asking, how do we go about if we wanted to have someone come out with your from your organization to speak to our young people? So if they wanted to reach out, get someone from IROC, how would they go about getting a hold of any one of you at the organization to do that?
We're available via email or on our website. So our email address, we do come to schools and we service Philadelphia and surrounding areas. Our email address is info, that's I-N-F-O, at iroc.org. So that's info at iroc.org. And our website is also iroc.org.
And don't worry, those of you who are listening and you might not have had a chance, thank you for thank you, Facebook, to our Facebook listener. Thank you for that. If you're not sure, if you didn't get a chance to write that down, at the end of the show, she's going to put on the Hannah Footprints page how to get a hold of her, how to contact her, how to order, because we have someone else who just asked, how do we purchase the book? Is it a hard copy? Are we able to get it for our Kindles or notebooks or, you know, easy readers?
So that's
the next question.
Yes, it's in Kindle. It's on Kindle, Amazon Kindle. It's available today. And it's also available in hardback if you go onto my website, which is IamABeautifulStruggle.com, and you can order it from our website. And it usually takes between 10 and 12 business days to ship and be sent out to you if you want to order a hardback copy.
All right. And again, like I said, don't worry. I know some of you all are driving and listening. We don't want you to write and drive and listen to. So
right.
We got it. It will be on the page. And then, too, she'll also give all her different ways that you can get a hold of her. So now this is my question for you. What's next? You've done the book. You have a fantastic foundation going on. What is next? What do you want to do?
I have so much in the works right now. I'm still developing my podcast, which is Lessons from My Former Self, and it's geared towards teenagers and young adults ages, that I'm having with individuals as I reflect on who I was at 14 and who I am now at 30 plus. So I'm developing that and grooming that, and I was teaching last year or administering a Women of Honor course that I used lessons from my former self as a tool with, and I'm really just building that up. I'm blogging over at I Am. My blog is IamAndreaWalker.com, and you know, I'm talking about the shifts and things like that in my mindset and how I see things now. I'm working on part two of A Beautiful Struggle, which we got some time, a long time before that'll be released. But basically I say that A Beautiful Struggle is the prelude to the next series of it, of that book. I'm also in the process of developing A Beautiful Struggle into a movie. Hopefully we'll be able to start casting sometime in 2016 for that. And filming will take place right here in Philadelphia. What else am I working on? I'm working on a lot of different collaborations with businesswomen here in the city of Philadelphia. Because I also offer like writing coaching and things like that. A lot of people have reached out to me in regards to helping them to get their book started or published or writing a book. I offer ghostwriting services, so I'm working on that. And I'm working with my nonprofit every single day. With, like I said, our goal is to get into the school district and be able to provide HIV testing to our schools. Right now we're working on World AIDS Day, which we're going to do a school takeover. Three schools in Philadelphia will be providing a pop-up concert there on World AIDS Day and providing free HIV testing. We're also registering our walk for the AIDS Walk in Philadelphia. If you guys would like to walk with us, IROC. We have about a team of 30 right now. Our goal is to have 100 people walk with us this year. And again, you can, you know, get that information off of our website or send me. I would love to have people come out and support not just myself and my personal situation or connection with HIV and AIDS, but IROC as a whole. I'm trying to think, what else am I missing here? Oh, okay, so A Beautiful Struggle. I'm finalizing the details for our journal. So, like I said, I started writing A Beautiful Struggle originally as just journal entries. So I've created a series of journals. They're leather. They're beautiful. And, you know, they're different. They're different than the usual journals. So they have the pages where you can write on them, but there's also pictures from the behind-the-scenes photo shoot of A Beautiful Struggle, which some of you guys may have seen some of the pictures on social media. If you follow me on social media, I've been dropping hints of those pictures that will be in the journal. And on these pictures, there's quotes from the book, inspirational quotes and things like that that I use to get through, you know, adversity and overcome the odds. So those are just some of the things that I'm working on right now. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, too.
Well, what you said is a whole lot. Now, this is a question for me. How can Ricky Jones volunteer at IROC?
Just text me.
But, you know, and that's a good question because somebody probably had that question too. I know. Yeah. I know that I want to volunteer. And with all of your projects that you have coming out, you know, everything that you're doing, you are more than welcome. Just text me, shoot me a message to say, hey, Ricky, I want to come back on here and let folks know what I'm doing. You have it. Just let me know.
That's great. But if anybody wants to volunteer, I say, you know, I'm touchable. I'm right here in the city of Philadelphia. I live here. I'm raising my family here. I'm a mother. So I'm more, you know, in tune with what's going on with the day-to-day life than I am of what's going on, you know, out here in the business world. It's a juggle. You know, I juggle both the mother and single mom life and the business life. But I say the best way to get to me is the same way you get to your friends. Shoot me a message on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, I have an assistant, and, you know, she's really good at getting me those really important messages, you know, that I need to, like, respond to right away. And if that doesn't work, then shoot me an email. You know, all of my emails come to my phone like everybody else in the world.
All right, so those of you who want to get out there, you know, I'll be, you know, when we get off the air, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more, so.
Sure.
But I just, but I'm so glad, I really, really am so glad that you've come on and you have really like I said, that's what Hannah Footprints is about, telling the story. I'm glad that you are sharing your story. I'm glad that you are walking in your purpose and your position, and just every, I'm glad for that, because just like how it's a beautiful day and how you say, you know, the struggle is the struggle, but it's still beautiful. It can be beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you so much for sharing it. Thank you for giving people that encouragement and that hope. I can't believe that an hour has gone by that quick. I'm telling you, I love when I have all of you on, the fantastic guests that I have on that are just have amazing things going on. But please remind everyone before we get off the air, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of the book, and how do they get a hold of Ayla, please?
So if you want to purchase a copy of A Beautiful Struggle, you can go on my website. It's a hardback. It's available in hardback and also on Kindle. My website for A Beautiful Struggle is iamabeautifulstruggle.com, and you can purchase the hardback copy there. If you would like to go on Amazon or Kindle, just type in A Beautiful Struggle. The title of the book is A Beautiful Struggle. And if you want to get a hold of me or follow me and you know, keep up with what it is that I have going on, I'm on Instagram at I Am A Beautiful Struggle. I'm on Twitter at I Am Andrea Walker. I think I'm on Periscope and Snapchat, I Am A Beautiful Struggle. And if you want to just send me an email or get a hold of me pertaining to anything that has to do with the book, my email address is andreaisabeautifulstruggle@gmail.com. And is it, if you need to contact anyone, you know, for information regarding how to volunteer for IROC or have someone come out to, whether it's your after-school program or come in and host a workshop or something like that, through my nonprofit, you can send us an email at info@i-roc.org. That's info@i-roc.org.
And again, don't worry about it if you didn't get a chance to write it down. It will be out there on the pages for you. So as we're wrapping this up, if there's one thing that you could tell someone or encourage someone to do, come in, you know, with the rest of this today, this beautiful day, once they step out into the street, one thing that you could tell them, what would it be?
I always say life lessons build strength, and life is truly a beautiful struggle. Whatever it is you're going through, understand that it's preparing you for tomorrow, it's preparing you for your destiny. Do not fight it. Go with it. Embrace it. No matter, you know, how embarrassed it may feel, how embarrassed you may feel, or how you think people will view you, whatever it is you're going through will always be a blessing to somebody else. Understand that. Accept your purpose.
That's right. Accept your purpose, people. I thank you, Andrea. Thank you so much for being on with me. Thank you so much. Those of
thank
you,
you so
if
much
you missed any... Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. Those of you who've missed any part of this, that's okay. It's going to be archived. You can always check it out right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ricky Jones. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at themsrrikkijones@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Google Plus, all under Ricky Jones. Make sure that you go to the Hand and Footprint page and you on Facebook, and that way you can get all the links to this show and everything that you can get from Andrea as far as how to contact her, how to purchase the book. I thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you from the bottom of my heart, Andrea. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for listening in. Thank you guys for being constant supporters. I appreciate it. If it's not like breathing, guys, don't do it. Go on out there. Enjoy this day. Enjoy your life. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Have a good one, guys.